Tonight, my favorite investigative journalist, Shane Smith. You may have seen him on Bill Maher or on cable news. He's the guy who introduced Dennis Rodman to North Korea's lovely and talented Kim Jong-un the first time. The second visit, Shane Smith had been banned from planet Earth's utopian socialist paradise because he had exposed a deal between Un and glorious Russian leader Vlad the Putin involving tens of thousands of slaves exported to work the mines and timber fields of the steppes in Siberia. This was early in his career that started when an international hipster fashion magazine called Vice decided to add video content to their webpage. Shane wrangled his way onto the job and, with a three-man crew that had no mandate whatsoever, decided to go to the most horrendous, dog-forsaken pits of human misery on the planet. Somalia, Liberia, the Congo, cartels in Mexico, places where journalists fear to tread. These videos were so shocking, often involving narrow escapes and Shane Smith's absolutely untrained journalistic style, often reporting with beer in hand, caught some attention. Primarily because he represents the American working class shub with a conscience and a non-judgmental curiosity when he's interviewing General Buck Naked from the African Blood Diamond era. He used to strip down, cut open a live baby, and drench himself in their blood before going into battle. And now the general has since found Jesus and lives as a preacher, which is an awesome fallback career in an environment left in the rubble of war, desperation, and despair. And that's why I love Shane Smith. His work came to the attention of Bill Maher, who now finances the Vice program, which has been elevated to HBO weekly specials. The crew is bigger, and Shane's not on camera as much, so I'm not that big of a fan of the HBO version, but it's still good. The second season has just started, and Shane is back on camera, so we'll see how it goes. Coming up is Shane Smith knocking back a bottle of Jack Daniels with Joe Rogan from the Joe Rogan podcast, while discussing a recent Vice episode about global warming, where he traveled to Greenland, observing mountains of ice falling into the sea daily. It's a great conversation, and it captures Shane's down-to-earth take on topics that are too scary to face in conversations that we can all relate to, his stock and trade. Comedian Joe Rogan, folk journalist Shane Smith, followed by more Interside Radio. Stay tuned.
What's the latest, man? Where have you been? Where are you getting back from? Every time I emailed you or Twitter or text messaging, you're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
In some dark places. It was so funny. We were talking before the show, and he's like, yeah, I should get you to do some of these things. I can send you to the North Pole. Like, I'm not going to the North Pole. You don't know me, man.
That's a good one, though. That's the easy one.
What are you saying? The North Pole is not good or easy. That's ridiculous. There's polar bears up there, right?
No.
There's South Pole polar bears?
North Pole, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So one of them has penguins, one of them doesn't.
South Pole.
South Pole is penguins?
Penguins.
North Pole doesn't.
Polar bears.
Why would that possibly be easy?
Well, it's a bitch to get to because you have to, like, fly 8,000 times and then go, you know, with...
A sled and dogs.
and ice helicopter and whatever.
Jeez.
But it's a crazy story what's going on there. Like, that's like, World War III happening up there.
So what's going on in the middle of the North Pole now?
The ice is melting.
Right.
And that's leading to two things. One, opening up of passages so Russians can come right across, which is great because now it looks like we're going back to the Cold War. But it's also just tons of oil, tons of minerals can now be sort of, you know, mined.
Tapped.
Everyone's amassing huge sort of caches of arms. So, the Russians obviously are getting up there. Everyone's planting flags on the seabed floors. This is ours. No, this is ours.
Oh, God.
So the Scandies are trying to get in there. Canada's trying to get in there. Both are being destroyed by the Russians and the Americans.
Oh, God.
Chinese are in there. Everybody's getting there with subs. you know, lots of naval buildup, but huge arms buildup going on there, because that's going to be the next sort of the sort of transportation routes, but also, you know, all the rare earth minerals, oil, et cetera, et cetera.
So essentially, it's just like when the Bering Strait during the Ice Age was connecting the United States to Asia, and then it went away.
Yeah.
Now new passages like that are opening up.
Correct. The whole North Pole is melting. So when a lot of the earlier explorers were trying to get to China by going around the north, and now that's opening up north of Scandinavia, so that Russia can actually go right around Scandinavia, because they never really had a freshwater year-round port. That's a big deal for them. Same thing for Canada, same thing for the States. They're all trying to get up there and lay, you know, sort of rights to all the minerals and all the oil that's up.
So it's really, what was it before? Was it international waters? So was
well,
considered?
Well, yeah. I mean, people had laid claim to it, but you couldn't, no one went there, so who the hell cared? You know,
right.
What does it matter? You couldn't get through because it was all iced up. So now what's happening is a massive land grab. People are just planting their flags and saying, no, this is ours. No, this is not yours. This is ours. And they're just sort of fighting it out. But basically up there, might makes right. So if I got my ships up there, I got my guns up there, I got my Air Force up there, guess what? It's mine.
Wow. And it's so fascinating how over the last few years they've discovered all these massive, massive supplies of oil up
huge.
There.
Huge, yeah.
Huge reserves of oil, shale oil and all.
Yeah, there's all different. I mean, the worst oil that they have for the environment is in Canada is the tar sands.
Yeah.
Where they have to take all the fresh water, boil up the sand, and get the oil out. Cost tons and tons of money and whatever. But because oil is so expensive, now that it's become, you know, economically feasible. And then you have all of this sort of chemical sand, all the water's destroyed, and then obviously you got the oil.
It's oil shale, that's what they're saying.
Yeah. Shale oil. There's fracking to get natural gas, and there's fracking and blowing up to get the shale oil.
It's interesting that they're just finding this over the last, you know, decade or so.
Well, they knew about it, but it was too expensive.
Oh,
I see. It wasn't economically viable, but now because it's $100 a barrel, they're like, blow the out of everything and get us the oil. Okay. Fracking isn't anything new.
Right.
Tar sands aren't anything new. It's now economically viable to actually get the oil because it was too expensive.
There's a thing that comes up when you talk about anything that causes some sort of environmental hazard where you have two different types of people that automatically jump on the argument.
Mm.
There's people that are like, oh my God, we have to save owls. And then there's these other people that are not financially successful but support hardcore Republican ideals, including the sacrificing of the environment for some sort of an economic gain.
I don't understand it. And I just did a piece on Greenland that's going to be airing on our HBO show. It's interesting because I did a piece on sea level rise last season. And generally about 90% of our comments are like, you guys are wrong, it's great. And then there's 10%. And like 80% of the comments all of a sudden on the environmental stuff were negative. And I was like, how's this even happening? And there's a study was done that if the first four comments on an environmental thing or any like news piece are negative, then people negate the piece. So they spend hundreds of millions of dollars for bloggers and people to just go out and do comments so that anything launches, they sit there and they say that this is bad or not true, whatever. You know, when I talk to scientists all the time, I talk to the chief climatologist at NASA. And I said, okay, so how much of this is man-made? Because I went to Greenland and it's melting. And Greenland is going to melt and it's 24 feet of sea level rise. So if the sea level rise is 24 feet, then 80% of the world's cities go underwater. So I said, okay, how much of this is man-made? And he's a conservative scientist. He's like a NASA guy. He's not like some crazy tree-hugging guy. And he's like, well, 100% of it. I said, hold on, what do you mean 100%? It was natural. He said, no, it's 100%. Like, if you look at it, he's like, if we cut our carbon emissions by 80%, it's still going to continue for the next 500 years, global warming. But we just slow down the pace of it. And I'm like, well, how long, you know, how much of Greenland's going to melt? He goes, well, all of it. It's just a question of how fast. Is it going to be 500 years? Is it going to be 50 years? Is it going to be, you know, 150 years? He's saying this as if it's boring. And I'm saying, hold on, this is a global scientific consensus.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, well, people in America don't understand that. I don't understand that, and I do this for a living. That, you know, because we did a thing on the Texas drought, because we, you know, there was a drought here in California. Everybody's like, global warming, global warming. And in Texas, they've had a drought for 3 years, and they deny climate change. Like Rick Perry has said it's not true, governor of the state. And then you sit there and say, okay, well, how is that possible? So we went to talk to people, and they're like, yeah, climate change has been denied. I mean, it's been disproven. And that I find insidious because they know it's not true. Fossil fuel companies know it's not true. The car companies know it's not true. The politicians know it's not true. They know what the global consensus is, the scientific consensus. And yet they say that it's not happening. They're fucking all of humanity and the future of humanity for short-term profits. And that's what's insidious about climate change denial.
It's very insidious. And it's very fascinating to me, this play on these people, these no-nonsense type people. There's a mentality that people adopt where they don't want to be fools.
Right.
And it's the no-nonsense mentality. This is like something that I've really been studying for quite a while. There's people that, in spite of all the evidence in front of them, they want to believe the official story on almost everything and almost always take the conservative viewpoint. Mm. It's against them.
Mm.
And yet they still support it. Mm. A lot of them are hardworking, blue-collar people, and they have this idea that somehow or another, in the future, they want to be able to make money freely.
Sure. Sure.
So, you know, I don't want the government stepping in and stopping all this shale, because
sure,
I could step in and maybe do a little shale mining myself and start making millions of dollars. And right now they're not. Right now they're the ones who are being punished by a lot of these ideas that they're pushing forth themselves. It's very strange.
I agree with you, and I've always found it incredibly confusing.
Yeah.
We just did this story on vets returning from Afghanistan and Iraq and how they're over-medicated by the VA. It's a huge problem.
Well, it's working folks who support big business.
Well, that's like, it. And if you talk to the disillusioned veterans coming back from these wars that were fought for economic reasons, and when they realize that, they're like, oh, we were duped. We went over there to fight the good fight.
There's
no good fight. We went over there to fight for oil.
And by the way, there's never been a good fight, right?
I mean, look, you could say World War II, you know, Nazis bad, you know, very bad people. I would say that Iraq now is pretty much a given. There were no weapons of mass destruction. He wasn't doing anything with al-Qaeda. It was a secular regime. They were enemies. We went in to get oil. And I think, you know, if you look at Afghanistan now, I just did a piece on Afghanistan, and the Taliban are running South Afghanistan, and the Northern Alliance are running Northern Afghanistan. And the minute we pull out, it's going to be the Taliban take over the South just like they did before. And $1 trillion and hundreds of thousands of lives are just going to be wasted for nothing because al-Qaeda is going to be in with the Taliban again, which is why we went in there in the first place. So people are used, you know, for economic purposes. And that I find insidious. People should not be used for
it. It is not just insidious. It's maddening because a lot of those people who really signed up to serve their country
Correct.
Are real, legit heroes.
Correct.
And they were used.
Correct.
And if you go back and read Smedley Butler's War is Just a Racket from 1930-something, he was a major brigadier, major general character, well-respected military man, who spent his whole life in the service of the country, and then realized when he was retiring that he only existed to go out there and make sure things were safe for bankers, clear the air for oil manufacturers, whatever it was that he was really doing. Mm. He thought he was over there, you know, promoting freedom and keeping America safe. And he wrote this fascinating and very damning piece. And this is in the 1930s.
Yeah.
So it's always been like that. It's always been this double hustle that even the people involved in it don't realize they're a part of the hustle. The very most important part, the machine, the hammer itself, doesn't realize it's part of the hustle. The very guys pulling the trigger.
Well, if they realized that, they wouldn't go fight.
It's so insidious that you could figure out a way to get someone to do that. Mm-hmm. And the way you get them to do that is actually get them to love their country. Mm-hmm. Actually get real heroes.
Mm-hmm. Like, preying off patriotism.
It's that thing too, though, man, that I'm a good person and I'm a no-nonsense good person. And that gets preyed upon with this whole global warming denial thing.
I'm a gambling guy. Even if it's a 1% chance. What if it's 5%? What if it's 10%? Wouldn't you want to hedge your bet against a complete environmental disaster? I would. I'm a gambling man. Because even if it's 1% true, I'm convinced it's 100% true. But even if it's 1% true, don't you want to hedge your bet?
I think it's a confirmation bias issue that these ideas fit into their no-nonsense mentality.
Sure.
The no-nonsense mentality is almost like a religion. Like,
right.
They're not even looking into it. They just go with this no-nonsense idea, even in the face of all sorts of...
Well, it's interesting in Texas because you have a loss of a whole way of life. All the cows are dying. They've had a 3-year drought. They've either sold them off or they've died. In the face of all your cattle, which was Texas for the longest period of time, dying because of this prolonged drought, now you have people who were deniers saying, actually, there might be something to this. And I don't know what it is, but we got to look into it. I mean, we can't just pray for rain anymore. There was a Republican congressman that we talked to who said, I was just a climate change denier because Al Gore was for it, therefore I was against it. And then when I did the research, there's something to this, and he got drummed out of the party and lost a seat.
Wow.
It's big political business down there, and it's an oil state. It's an oil state now because there's no more cattle. So they're all the water, they have no water for the cattle they're using for fracking. So you sit there and you say, look, it's gotten so bad now that even people who have been deniers for so long are saying, what are we going to do?
Have you seen the photos of Lake Travis?
Yeah, Lake Travis. Down to nothing.
Boats that were like sitting on the shore in front of these people's million-dollar estates.
Yeah.
And now these things are in the middle of this field.
Yeah. By the way, that's Green Texas. Texas is
Saudi
Arabia.
That's Austin. Is about as rainy as it gets. Yeah. That's happening in California as well. Mm-hmm. Lake Tahoe used to have some of the best bass fishing in Southern California, filled with largemouth bass. 270,000 acres is private, so you couldn't just get in there to fish. So they would let people come in and fish. The employees would fish. Right. Like, people would pay to fish there. It's gone now. Yeah. It's gone. All the fish are dead.
Yeah.
The water is like 6 inches deep.
Right.
Like, you can walk across the entire lake now.
And that happens when lakes are disappearing. Like, all these places are disappearing. And people still say, Joe, it's natural occurrence of things. Mm-hmm. There's no climate change. What do you say to them?
Well, the last guy that I had a conversation with that told me that it was just a natural cycle, I said, well, there's always been natural cycles, absolutely. Climate on the Earth has varied widely, but it doesn't mean that human intervention, what we've caused, can't play a big part in accelerating that and accelerating it in an unmanageable way. And he didn't really have an answer to that because he was a no-nonsense guy. He's just a young military kid who has this idea in his head that, you know, there's a lot of hippie bolts being flown around there about the environment.
Well, I think that's the problem.
You know, Al Gore made $1 billion telling everybody that. He's the first green billionaire. Do you know that?
Well, the interesting thing about Al Gore, not that I'm an Al Gore lover, I came up actually hating Tipper Gore because she was censorship, et cetera, et cetera.
All the rap lyrics you're
exactly,
going after.
Exactly. But you got to look at Al Gore and say he wasn't liberal. He was a tobacco guy from the South, centrist. In most countries in the world, he'd be sort of center-right, conservative dude. He came out of politics freaking out about the environment. Why? Because all that he learned in politics freaked him out so much that he said, I'm going to actually go out and do this movie. And what's interesting is he wins the Nobel Prize, does a good movie, all this stuff, but then gets vilified to the point that now Al Gore is a joke. He's this and it's Al Gore. And by the way, isn't that a great triumph for deniers? Because they're like, Al Gore is now a joke for doing a movie that says, hey, by the way, the environment's up.
Was there anything that he said that was debunked?
No, they just attacked. They kept attacking him, attacking him, attacking him.
If you go back to the early days of the Little Ice Age, which only ended about 200 years ago, Little Ice Age, the glaciers were coming down from the north at such a rate that the village priests in Northern Europe walked on the glaciers with a cross and a Bible and asked God to stop Satan from bringing the ice down upon Europe because it was killing the crops. Did you learn that in your global warming brainwashing session? In other words, if man wasn't here polluting the earth with carbon dioxide, how come the ice retreated and the ice ages diminished without mankind? Can you explain that to me? Because the minute you explain it to me, you admit that there are cycles in nature that we have no control over. And so don't tell me and don't lecture me about the environment. Why did the ice retreat 6 times before man was industrialized? Because there are cycles in nature, whether they be sunspots or volcanic activity or whatever, that heated up the earth. We don't know. The same as what we're going through right now. We're going through a very mild warming phase. And there's not a thing we can do about it. Nothing. Nothing. Zero. Now, on top of the fact that the economies of the world are broken, the country is bankrupt, these charlatans now want to impose this garbage on us and destroy what's left of our industrial base. It's men like me who know the truth, we're truth sayers, and they want the truth killed so they can get away with the big lie. They want the truth killed so they can get away with the big lie. So they get away with the big lie. They get away with the big lie. They want the truth killed. So they get away with the big lie.
Whiskey I crave. If I don't get rye whiskey, I'll go to my grave. Rye, whiskey, rye, whiskey I cry. If I don't get rye whiskey, I surely will die. I'll eat when I'm hungry, I'll drink when I'm dry, and if whiskey don't kill me, I'll live till I die. I'll drink my corn whiskey and rye whiskey too, and the ones that don't like me can leave me alone.
And there'll be a rally to that effect for Pacifica over there in Martin Luther King Park at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday. Here eroding on the Great Divide, nothing around me but the Rockies and sky. It's there you find me as years go by, railroading on the Great Divide. I'm a Unitarian. I've been a Unitarian for almost 44 years. Started out in Salt Lake. I think I'm a Unitarian. How do you know if you're Unitarian, for Christ's sake? I mean, there's no psychic scars as with the Baltimore Catechism. No identifying marks with, like with Jewish males. Maybe if you drink a lot of coffee and know how to run a mimeograph, you're Unitarian. I don't know. In the religious education program with the Unitarians, I taught Unitarian non-competitive games, where you just sit on the rock and discuss how you're going to share power until the wine and the brie run out. Oh, wow. I wrote liberal, during the 1960s, I wrote liberal folk songs for the Unitarian hymnals. They're asked to from Boston. Liberal folk songs like, I'm going down the road feeling.
The individuals who have been conducting this campaign have a number of agendas that they wish to fulfill.
I'm going down the road feeling.
Very small number of people that they
probably shouldn't be treated this way.
They were even discussing the idea of taking over the station by force. And we know who they are. It would be my business. I could best describe it as a private agenda. It's a group of individuals, and we know who they are, and we know what they're after. Fact and fiction, and that's one of the pieces of fiction. In fact, I said it at a staff meeting, and apparently some people just didn't feel the need to hold our staff meetings.
Railroading on the great
put out on the internet.
Nothing around me but
I said the WBAI is not to be the voice of the left, and I stand by that. By the way, what do I mean? I mean people's philosophical and ideological meanings are their own business. We're not in the business of forming political ideas. I mean, that's just what it does.
I turned on my radio from the dial. Thought I'd listen to some news for a while. Got NPR. Here's what I found. Real news? Hardly a trace, just one damn marathon marketplace. Just one damn marathon marketplace. The NASDAQ's up, the Dow's in the cellar, and NPR sold out to Rockefeller. Rockefeller. It's .com this and .com that. It's .com three and .com thief. .com fat, .com dot, it's .com this and .com this. It's .com this and .com that. The underwriters are getting fat on airwaves sold from you and me by a bunch of thieves called the FCC. They don't give a damn what we want. See, they've all caved into corporate greed and sold us out to the ruling class to the whole damn bunch. It's .com. I got tired of being treated like a bitch, so I called up the station and canceled my pledge. In a mighty act of liberation, sent the money off to my community station. I said, I love you. If you blow it, I'll sure as hell let you know it. I'll knock the radio off the shelf, buy a transmitter, and do it myself. Whitebeard the Pirate. This is radio station HOBO, broadcasting on a vagrancy of 60 to 90 days, signing off.
For now. Shane Smith on the Joe Rogan Podcast, followed by the insane right-wing douche nozzle, Michael Savage. Some Woody Guthrie to bring us back, and Utah Phillips to take us home. Music by the Floyd, which one is pink? I don't know. And Fish and some stuff from my very own private Pacifica collection. This has been the Innerside Radio program. This and all previous Innerside Radio programs are available on the Interzone. Simply point your googly spyware at the Innerside. My name is Scooter, and I'll see y'all next week.